Not everyone will agree, but what I follow as a psak that I got from came from Rav Moshe originally, because I was very fortunate that when I first started the Chermanish as the head, Rabbi Felder, who's now a chutzpah of mine, but at that time was Rav Aaron Felder, had just written his sefer Yisodei Smachos, and I sat down with him with 150 questions, which he took to Rav Moshe, and I'm sure that this was one of them. And basically, if dentures are in the mouth, and they're there, they're sitting, they're comfortable. You know that they had dentures. You can see that there are dentures, but they're sitting there. You can leave them in the mouth. You don't have to remove them. If they're hanging, or someone in the hospital stuck them into the mouth, and they're all askew, I would probably remove it. But it does get buried with the person. It does get buried with the person. The rule is as follows. Let me tell you what the rule is. It's worth knowing the rule. The rule is anything that replaces a body part, like dentures, replaces teeth, gets buried with the person. A prosthetic limb gets buried with the person. A glass eye gets buried with the person. Somebody has an implanted cochlear implants that people have for hearing. We don't remove any of that. If someone has a hearing aid or someone has glasses, we don't bury them with that, even though it helps their body function, but it's not something that replaces a body part. It enhances a body part. So if it enhances a body part, we don't bury it. If it replaces a body part, we bury it. And we actually put the prosthetic limb on the leg before we dress it. So I would do that. If you have a leg that was removed and is now in plastic because it was removed, the person died a day or two later, I would also put that into the tafrich. I might take it out of the plastic. I would put it in the sheet so it doesn't dirty the tafrich. And I would then put it into where the leg goes and put on the pants over that. Okay, so that's the rule of prosthesis. The one question is when someone is wearing a wig that replaces hair nowadays, that is a discussion. It's brought down, by the way, in halacha that where years ago people used to have wigs actually sewn into their hair, okay? Then they left it, they didn't want to cut the hair to remove it. Most sheetahs say to leave it. Today, wigs are not like that. But if you're wearing a wig for beauty purposes, or you're wearing it for tzniyas purposes, we don't bury that wig. But if someone is wearing a wig to replace hair that they lost, certainly if there's a request to bury them with it, I would bury them with it. Okay? And there's some that would say that you should always bury them with it if their hair is lost, just like you would bury them with any other replacement to a body part. Yeah.
On the location?
Yes, on the location. Exactly. We put it on their head. Yes?
Let's say the body part is out of the prosthetic.
Yeah, I would ask them to bring it, absolutely, if you can. It should, l'chatchila, be buried with them. It's something that became part of their body, and they used it, we do bury it with them. Even if it has metal, by the way. Now, we're very careful not to use metal if it has metal. I'm just afraid we're going to get caught up in a question. I'll take one more, yeah.
How about a leg that was actually amputated? I mean, I know a situation where a big brother lost his leg because of diabetes, and he buried the leg in the backyard and instructed the leg to be buried with him.
Okay. If he did it in the backyard, I don't think the state would be happy about it. But since it's already done, and that's what they did, that's fine. I know someone who just died about 2 months ago and got the cemetery with my help to dig up his leg and take it to Eretz Yisrael with him. Actually, he died on a Thursday, and on Friday they got out the leg and they took it to Eretz Yisrael with him. Maybe it was actually even on the same, on Thursday, it was middle week, I take it back. They got it out. There's one cemetery that buried it, and they were willing to take it out immediately. And that's fine. But it doesn't have to be. I don't want you to think that if someone buried their leg somewhere else, not in the backyard, but in a grave somewhere here, and then they get buried elsewhere, that somehow, they're not going to get up, they're going to get up on crutches. No. You have to worry about that. There's no chiyuv to bury a limb where it is. Rav Moshe will bring them back with the limb. Now, okay, let's move on. So you've completed the rechitza, you've done the rechitza, and now I, again, can't tell you how impressed I was to see that you're actually standing up a body. I don't know if you're still doing it, but if you are, some of the women are probably not, because the women don't have the kochos to do it with bayats either. But with the men, we still do it where we don't have a mikveh. Where we have a mikveh, we use the mikveh simply because it's easier. But the fact is that the best way to do a tahara is to stand the person up. That's where tahara was meant to be done. The tisha come and pour it over their heads. So now you've completed the rechitza. You're done. There are tefillos that are said. The nails, as we said, are clean. There are tefillos that are said, as you know, Rosh HaKesipot, Pesukim that are recited. Now you've gotten to the point of the tahara. So you take off your gloves, you wash your hands again, right, left, right, left, right, left. And now you're ready for the tahara. So if you were using a mikveh, do you have a mikveh or you don't? No, no, no. So then what is generally done is there are a few different options. If you're standing up the body, then you would, first of all, again, you would wash your hands and you would fill 3 buckets of water. I don't recommend 2, even though it has it in your procedures. To be able to lift 12 quarts of water over the head of a person, if you need a gibor, most of us are not such gibor, and therefore 3 buckets, 3 is fine, with 8 quarts in each, or with more than 8 quarts in each, which is tisha kavim, is sufficient. And therefore, for that, as I said before, I would recommend 3-gallon painter's buckets rather than 5. And we fill that with cold water, not lukewarm, cold water. There's an emphasis on cold for the tahara. And then you would, as I said, we washed our hands. We should remove the gloves, put the gloves back on. You can dry your hands again, and you can then be ready for the tahara. So in the process of standing up the body, I'm going to try to describe it as best as I can, you would slide the body down towards the edge of the table. Obviously, someone would be supporting the head with one hand. Normally, we always support it with 2. So, and that same person would be supporting the shoulder, let's say over here. But again, you're just sliding it right now. So on the other side, the person would be supporting the shoulder on the left side. You would bring the legs over the edge of the table to the point where it's right before the knees reach the end of the table. And you would at that point have someone standing at the edge of the table where the legs are now, whatever it is, 18 inches or 20 inches off the table. And they would press on the ankles, so that by doing so, they're kind of pressing the ankles to come towards the foot of the table. At the same time they do that, the people at the top would actually lift the body at the same time. So that when the person stands, but yet the person is standing right at the edge of the table. We generally put some straw on the knees, the person is standing on straw. That's assuming that the knees are strong enough, are locked enough, are hard enough, that they're able to stand. If the knees are flaccid, you have to make a judgment call. There are times you can still slide it forward and kind of lock it in place by bringing the body forward a little bit. It locks the knee in place. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but those who do it might know what that is. Are you still standing on bodies? Maybe we shouldn't even talk about this. No. Let's not talk about this. We're wasting time. Okay, so we're not standing up by, so forget about it. There is a way to do it. If you want to do it, we'll talk about it. It's not for now. Now, okay, so if you're not doing it, what you want to do is raise the table as much as possible so that the angle of the table is as good as can be without the body just sliding right off. You then have boards. I assume you're using boards. Yes, you have there. We should. What I recommend are 2x4s that are preferably they are polyurethanes, that they are not they don't absorb water, and therefore they are less likely to be able to absorb bacteria, become a health issue. But so they're polyurethane, and you dip those boards into the buckets of water that have now been placed at the head of the table. So you have three buckets of water with 8 quarts in each at the head of the table, and you dip those gourds into the water of the Tahara. One person stands at the head, holding the head and the shoulder. Another person holding the shoulder on the other side, and they lift the body enough that you can put a board across the lower back right at the shoulder level so that the body is now raised off the table. So besides the table being angled as much as possible, you have the body raised off the table on this board. Now the table has not only a groove, but next to the groove there's a lip, so that when you put this board across, it's raising the body not only on the 2x4, but also on the lip, which is usually about an inch off the table, so that you get a little bit of height. Okay? Two people, the head is then usually placed on a headrest. The headrest should also be dipped into the Tahara water before you place it under the head. And then there is another board placed underneath the buttock. So you would have one person on either side lifting the buttock and placing the board underneath, right at the lower back, right above the buttock. So that will raise the lower part of the body. The body is completely covered at this point with the sheet of that was wet from the washing. Then another board is placed underneath the ankles. So now the body is lying on three boards. It is raised off the table. Water will be able to go down the back, which is the reason we do it. We dip the boards into the Tahara water so that it can somehow connect up, because you want to have the Tisha Kabin is something that is a unit of water that has the power of Tahara, and therefore that water connects to it. That's the thought, that's the minhag. Does it make 100% sense? Not always, but that's the way we do it, and that's the way you should do it. Now, once the body is on these boards, you have three people lifting these buckets. Now, the first person, the rule is, this water needs to be a continuous flow. There can't be a pause in the pouring of these Tisha Kabin. If there's a stop, you have to do it over again. So how do you do that? You have three buckets. So you start, first person pours over the forehead. They may start walking down towards the feet. There is a hakpada not to go back up, but to pour in one direction, okay? And before the second person can actually start pouring, as soon as they're halfway down, the second person can start pouring. And then the third person can start pouring before the second one finishes. That's the way it's generally done. Now, I'm going to tell you another way. And it's not to spend much time on this, but I will tell you, because I think you should know. In Eretz Yisrael is done this way, and while, as you see, I've not run to adopt Minhag Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, but this is one thing that many poskim question the Tahara, how it's done this way. So I'll tell you how to do it, and you'll discuss it. What I will tell you, most of Klal Yisrael is doing it the way we just showed you. The Yekis are doing it that way. Most people are doing it that way. The Yekis are doing it that way. The Chassid are not out of town, but there's no mikveh, they do it that way. But that's the way. There's another way. And that is to have three people lifting these three buckets. Thank you. Three people lifting these buckets. One standing at the right, the other standing at the left, a little further back from the body. The third person is even further back and in the center. Now this bucket is again very high, so it's a little bit harder. But the idea is that at the count of three, no one counts three, but at the same time, they shoot the water. They stand far back and they literally heave the water over the body So that it is like a shower, but in a horizontal position. If you've ever been to Israel, you know how they make sponge out and they shoot the water down the floor? That's what it's like. So they are literally, it's like simulating a shower in a horizontal position so that the water goes down from the head. I will tell you that we started doing this probably, I took over in the Chevra in 1981. We probably started doing this about late 80s, maybe 90. The reason was there was someone who was connected to the yeshiva I was in, who was Nifter, and people, the members of my Chevra went to do the Tahara, and they saw the Chevra Kaddish in Yerushalayim doing this. They came back, and we discussed it. I discussed it with a number of poskim, who said if you could do it, it would make sense. So we started doing it. I'll tell you, I went to lecture. I don't know if this is a name that will ring a bell. One of the first places I demonstrated this was in Silver Spring, Maryland. At that time, a very close friend of mine had just become a Rav. His name was Rabbi Kalman Winters of Chorot Lavrocha. I don't know if anyone here knew him, but he was Nifter probably 10 years ago already. But at that time, I demonstrated this. And when I left town, he didn't say anything. He went to Rav Einem Rezefor Lavrocha, who was the Av Bezdin of Silver Spring, Maryland. He was a big Adam Gadol. And he asked him, what do you say? So Rav Einem said, I don't know too much about these things. Let me look into it. So he came back a few days later. He said to him, I don't know how you could do it differently. It doesn't make any sense. Because a tahara was meant to be a shower. When you're walking water down, it's not a shower. It's meant to be derech harosh. There are poskim who write it's hadochas bosa ba'alma. It's like washing down a body. It's not a shower. It doesn't have the koach of the body over from the head down. Whatever it might be, chas v'sholem, for me to in any way insinuate that doing tahara this way is not, we've done it. We ourselves will do it sometimes when we can't, for whatever reason, shoot from the head. We have certain rooms. We don't even have the room behind to do it. There are times where if you do it that way, you can open there are things with the head that are problematic. Whatever it might be, we do it this way in many instances. But the fact is that it's something to consider. If you want to, I will tell you, and someone had asked me this, if you want, I will tell you that we have a website called NASC.org, and on it there are actually, there's a shiur that's about almost 3 hours long. I should have told you this before. I was afraid you're going to find out. No one's going to invite me to speak anymore. But the point is there's a shiur that has basically everything that I said here. It shows you exactly how to do it very clearly. You can study it if you want. It's there. It's on the website. The other thing that's on the website is Weber, all the things you might look to find that's on there. Again, we do this as a service. We lose money on it. One more thing, and I'm afraid I'm going to forget to say it. On the website, we recently put up about 15 little clips describing exactly how to remove a tube, a colostomy, a tracheostomy, torn skin, all kinds of things, and it's excellent. We did it together with the Chevra Kaddisha of Silver Spring, Maryland, actually, and I went down right before I had the stroke, a few weeks before, maybe 2 months before. I was still walking then, but I was... I went down and Baruch Shem, it's up there and it's really very valuable. You're welcome to look at it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I can only tell you that until relatively recently, for the men, understandably, as opposed to the women, where it's much more difficult, we did try to lift. We made it tonight at some gentlemen who were just simply too heavy. That was part of our asking. We were afterwards, we resorted to the board only with that. And clearly, when you do lift, you have the advantage of, I'm just pointing it out, forming the three.
1,000%. Rabbi Yudin, lifting.
The people in this group who know what I'm talking about.
Okay. So I will tell you this. Lifting the body is the best way. It's A. It might be better than mikveh. It's the way it was misukan. Okay? And Ramesha, familiar with Ramesha's tshuva, where he said, we don't need a mikveh. Mikvah was, Tisha Kabin was the way it was done. There was a funeral home in New York. I believe it was Parkside. They opened the first mikvah. and they started charging $100 more. Rav Moshe said, don't do it. We want to keep the price of Levaya low. Better to use Tisha Kabin. Okay, so, but Tisha Kabin, again, L'chatchila is standing the body up. That's the way it should be done. Reparat Steinberg in his booklet, that's what he writes, that's what it was done in the Chicago booklet, and that's the way we still do it today. There are ways of doing it. I don't know if we actually showed in that video, but even if you can't stand the body, if you could sit it at the end of the table, and there are ways of doing it with a headrest so it doesn't slide off, that too. You lift it so it's in a sitting position, and you pour over the head. Much better than this. Okay? It's still much better because it's Derech HaRosh. That's the way it's meant to be. This way of shooting is a better alternative for the B'dievet of having it on boards. Okay? That's very much the point. I thank you, Rabbi Yudin, for elaborating on it because it's important. Now, the body is, once you pour the water over the body, Tisha Kabin has been done. The minhag is everybody says Toru, Toru, Toru at the end of Tahori, Tahori, Tahori for the women, and the Tahara is complete. Once the body is finished with the Tahara, here's a very important thing. We don't place the body after the Tahara into the water that existed there before the Tahara. There is a very strong emphasis not to have the body after the Tahara come in contact with water from the Tahara. So therefore, when you take the body off the boards, there's nothing you can do. You're going to put the body down, you assume that whatever water, as you walk the water down, you also wash away all the rechitza water. But if you are sitting the body up, now there's a wet table. That, or you're putting the body in the mikveh, you take it off the table. So now the table is wet from the rechitza. You can't put the body back down into that rechitza water. So when you sit the body up and you lift it up, you have to dry the table before you put the body back down onto the table. And the same is true if you're putting it in the mikveh. You have to dry the table completely before you put it back. Okay, that's something that's very important to remember. And it applies to other things too. I'll tell you about a tikkun that we have. We used to find, we'd be in the tar room and somebody would start yelling, did you see that shmata that was on that table there? You know, it had some blood on it. Do you know what happened to it? Or, I mean, because this is the human condition. So we would put the shmata there and people think they're going to come back. They forgot about it and now they don't know where it was. Okay? We created a tikkun that when we come into a tahara room, we place a cloth, a shmata, on a countertop that doesn't absorb. And that is the repository for all the blood. You put all the blood right onto this place. When you're using a cloth or a shmata and you're dry cleaning blood, it gets put right there. Now, if you need a shmata again, you don't have to use a new shmata. You could use the same shmata because that's where all the bloody shmatas are. Just go right there and use it. And then at the end, you wrap it up. You know exactly where it always is. That's a tikkun. A nice way. It's not a new minhag. It's a tikkun. Okay? Now, however, you can't use a shmata for blood that was used by the rechitza after the tahara because you don't want to touch the body with a cloth that had rechitza water on it. So this applies in a lot of different cases, but that is a concept to remember. So you dry the body and you dry it well, and this time when you're drying it, you start again, you start with the head, the right side, you cover the whole body, do the right side, the left side, do it together, the front. When you're turning now, you don't have to turn so far. The way I showed you to turn, that's when you're washing the back. Or if you're working on a problem with the back, normally, the less we turn, the better. Because turning causes purging, causes problems from the mouth, all kinds of things. You don't want to turn. So in order to dry the back, turn halfway, turn a quarter. Just turn enough so you can get behind it and dry it. You dry it and the table. You turn the other way, even less, just to dry it completely. Yes?
Sometimes the person is heavy or has a lot of extra skin, and we find that the body is touching even with three or four boards. Is it better to put more boards?
No. Tahara was meant to be roishoi verubai, the head and most of it. If there's a little bit touching the skin, first of all, you're going to have more place covered by the boards that you're putting there to try to prevent it than you have from the skin touching it. So I would leave it with three boards, unless someone's exceedingly heavy that doing it's not at all doing anything. Maybe it's better to put on boards that was dipped in the tahara water, maybe. But that's it. Also, another option is take a piece of cloth and put it underneath. It will not touch the table. The water will go through the cloth and it'll be good. You can do that. Sometimes a hand is there. Take a shmat and put it underneath. That's another way to do it. But whatever it is, I'm not a big fan of putting a million boards underneath, horizontal. It's this way, that way. You put in three boards, that's the way it was. And if you, you know, a little bit is touching the table, it's not the end of the world, okay? Because Reisha Verubai was the Takana. And this will be Reisha Verubai, okay? That's my feeling on that, okay? People may disagree with me, but that's my understanding. Now, so you've finished washing, you dried the body completely, you've been careful not to turn further than necessary. That, by the way, is a tikkun, knowing how much to turn. It's the same thing. When you have to turn the body, I showed you how to turn. When you have to turn because you need to work on the back, that's the way to do it. But if you don't have to, turn it just a little bit so that you can dry the back. Don't turn more than you have to. It's unnecessary. There you don't need people holding. Just turn a little bit. That's all it takes. That's fine. You have to move the body all the way over, just where it is. Turn it a little bit. Now, the tachrichim. So I'm going to bring over the tachrichim. I don't know. Let me ask you a question. I know it's getting late. Do we really have to go through the whole process? I'll show it left for the people not here. Let's go. Let's do it. No problem. We'll get it done. It'll be good. We won't do a perfect job, but we'll do some of the job. So I think I'm going to leave the tachrichim that they had here. What I will do is ask for a volunteer that will take off the cover from the urn, because it's hard for me to do that. Okay, put it up against the wrong head. Now, I'm going to make a point. I guess a lot of straw, this is not a lot of straw. What? That's, I need, I'm going to like double that, but I'll try to do the best I can. It's good. It'll be good. Okay. Thank you. So, I'm going to show you, first of all, when you take off the Aron cover. This cover is on a casket that is tapered. There are caskets, I don't know if you ever seen them, but the ones going to Eretz Yisrael, certainly, but there are others that are square. When you have a square Aron, you really need to know which is the head and which is the foot. Because if you're using, have you ever used a fancy casket? Probably not in this cover, probably only in plain boxes. If you have a fancy casket, you have a real problem because you can put the head, if you open the cover opens differently. It opens it, and it opens at the head on one side. If you put it to the wrong side, you'll open it, you'll be looking fairly, you'll be doing an idea of the feet, not the head, because it'll just be upside down. You have the head opening at the wrong side. But in general, you need to know which is the top and which is the bottom, because the pegs align a certain way. And then when you put the body, you put it on, now what? You have to take the body out and turn it around. It's not so pushy. So you need to know when you're doing it through a square box to make sure you know which is top and which is bottom. That's just top. And this is something that should be done when you... So we have a tikkun, and whenever we take off an aron, a cover, replace it up against the wall, replace it with the head up, so we always know which is top and which is bottom. Okay, but even inside the urn, we will write the name sometimes on the inside of the head, so we know there's a siman which is head and which is bottom. Okay, so now you have the head. So I'm going to put in the, By the way, I don't know if you're using linen tachrichim, but I am. What?
We use the bed walls here.
the better ones here. Okay, so you're using lithotripsy for the knowledge. You should continue using it. It's one thing I would very much suggest that you continue doing is using lithotripsy. You put out the sheet. You're going to help me. The other way. Okay, this is a sheet of the cheaper material. It's not linen. And you should be careful that the seam, or the seams, are facing up. So that when you wrap the body, it's pulled down more. So that when you wrap the body, the seams are inside. More. Keep going. Even more. That's fine. This is the difference of a sheet that is a full-size sheet and a sheet that is diagonal.
The way it was, what it gives us comes with this, it's not like that. It's that we have to bend the diagonal.
Right, so I'm telling you, tell them, tell whoever it is, Ricky, I don't know what his name is, but whoever it is, that you've got to get the VOD sets from now on. Okay? Tell them, the VOD sets. Okay? It's not that I need to be memorialized by the Tafrichim. It's just that it's better set of Tafrichim. It's literally nothing, but that's the way Tafrichim were meant to be. Now, I would put this into the Oren a little bit further so that it's a little longer on that side, a little bit skewed. A little bit skewed to the right. Keep it straight. That it's a little bit longer on the right side than on the left side. Okay? Now, the reason for that is, you can pull that much more. Okay. This is the way I would set up the yarn a little bit longer on this side, so that when you wrap it, and you close the head first, and then the feet, and you wrap it the left side, right side, the right side will actually wrap around the top of the person. It's not going to gap in the middle, and it'll be much more becoming. If you have a heavy person, and that happens frequently, and more so, by the way, for the women than by the men, much more likely not that the women are heavier, it's just the way their bodies are distributed. It is, you can do, with this sheet, you can do it diagonally the way you always do with the long sheet, and you will pull, just put the whole thing in, the diagonal. Okay, it's fine. The problem with that is the sheet over here is now hanging. So you take it, you fold it over once, and you fold it over twice. And you put the person into the urn. Once they are in the urn, you lift the legs a little bit, pull this material underneath, and now what you have is this goes over the head. And now you have a much longer piece of material to go around the chest and the body on this side and on the other side. So you're able to wrap the body completely for someone who's very heavy. Okay? Hope that makes sense, but that's how it's done. Now, I'm going to talk about setting up the Aron in advance, and I'm going to show you the Tafrichim. We generally set up the Aron way in advance, as we mentioned earlier, and we lay out the Tafrichim on the Aron outside in a place where if it drops, it's not going to get wet. You want it in a place where it's dry. If you take out the tachrichim in the tahara room and something drops, now you have a wet soda, or a wet pair of pants, or whatever it might be. So you want to take it out. First, put the kippel, because that's the last thing you're going to need. And then you put the pants. And then you put the shirt on top. And then, this is a woman's set. So you have the bonnet. And the face cover, I think I saw still there.
face cover.
You have everything here. Now you have a pillow. You have a pillow. Now I'm going to show you how to pack a pillow. And I will tell you that your funeral homes should get a garbage can like the one from Sesame Street. You know, a metal one, because it's not a fire hazard. And fill it with Excelsior. They have plenty of this stuff around because their fancy caskets use them. It should have plenty of this so you can use it in the process of the Tahara. This has tremendous use. By the way, this is wood. It's just wood. It's wood shavings. That's what it is. It's not straw. It's wood shavings. With straw, you'd smell it. It's wood shavings, okay? Believe me, I know because they send from Florida, we get hay and straw, and it smells like a barn, okay? This is straw. So, I mean, this is not straw. It's wood shavings. Now, I'm going to show you how to pack a pillow so that even on the better type of pillow, you always have to pack it on the side that doesn't have the stitching. Because on the Beren Tachrichim, it's hand-sewn, and if you put pressure on the stitching, it's going to open. So you want to take enough straw to fill the pillow. Let's get through this. And I'm going to demonstrate a little bit higher up so you can see it. This is the pillow. I can't tell you how many Chevres Kaddisha didn't know it's a pillow. They thought it's a bed for the blood. Okay? And that's what it was. So they didn't have a pillow. But there's a pillow. It's part of what the Tachrichim was supposed to have. Another example. So now, you pack this. Take it here. Doesn't matter on this where you go. But on the linen ones, make sure you're packing it on the side that does not have the stitching. And you take this entire piece and you just push it in. Keep pushing it in that same direction. Just keep pushing the straw so that it is full, but it's in the same direction. Don't stuff it down. Push it in that same direction. It's pretty much full. Now you take this and take a look at what you have. Because you pushed it in that direction, you have basically a pillow like in the shape of a kidney bean. Okay, it's thinner here, thicker here, it's solid, it can support the head. It's like what they sell in airports, you know, for to wear. It's not quite, but this is what it is. That's the way to make a pillow. A pillow is meant to support the head. The problem with this is that even if you put a head on this, some heads will not sit on it because it's just not that solid of a thing. The head can be bigger than the pillow. They make, I don't know why they're so cheap with the material of the pillow, but they are. So therefore what I suggest is, and I'm going to take this out, but remember how I told you, I'm going to suggest that you take Excelsior, the straw, before you make the pillow, or after, it doesn't matter, but you put this Excelsior along the top of the urn, so that the urn on the top has a layer of straw, okay, along the top, more at the sides, less in the middle, and then you take that full pillow and put it there, it sits on it, it can't move. The head sitts on it. It goes to Eretz Yisrael, or it goes to the kever, it doesn't matter, they put the nifter into the hearse, it doesn't fall off as you're doing it, it stays. That's the point. You need Excelsior. This Excelsior has a lot of uses. Tikkun. You have a bunch of blood at the foot of the urn. You want to make sure it doesn't dirty the Tachrichim. So you put it at the corner of the urn, take a little Excelsior, put it between that bed and the body, so that now it's not going to dirty the Tachrichim. As the urn slides, it's not going to dirty the Tachrichim. You have a little separation. I'll never forget, there was a man in my neighborhood who used to, it was bent over with scoliosis, to the point that he was walked like this, literally like this. He was like a bullet, terribly, terribly bent over. I used to watch him cross the street every time I went to shul. I would make a left, and he'd be crossing in front of me, going to a different shul. I don't think this too often, but I used to think, I hope I never have to do this now. Because there's no way we're going to close the arm. The man's going to lie there and his head's going to be sticking up like this. There's no way. I mean, he lived like this for many years. He couldn't straighten up. What are we going to do? So my tefillos were answered. I was in Eretz Yisrael. And I get a call from my office. So-and-so passed away. I said, you're kidding. I'm going to really miss his tahara. I mean, I used to joke, I like in my own mind, I never told anybody about it. I told them, get the deepest aura that they have. Just get a deep aura. They have to make it special, make it special. So they got an aura that was a lot deeper, and my office called me during the Tahara, that it's still about an inch and a half too shallow. What are we going to do? So I told them, get strong. And put it under his lower back. And when you do that, the back comes up, the lower back comes up, and the head goes down. And because it was a deep arm, we were able to do it, and they closed it. That's how they did it. Someone is in a comatose position. They're lying on their side. And why don't you bury them in the comat? If you take some of that straw and put it under the side on which he's lying, it'll bring it up enough so at least the head is lying straight, the body is lying straight. These are just little things that can be done with the straw. It's good to have. But always, as a regular way of setting up an urn, I'm going to leave it like this. You can have a look at it afterwards, you'll see, and then you put the pillow on top of it. Okay? Now, I'm going to show what the tahrichim look like for people who are not accustomed to doing urns and never seen a tahara. So, you saw what the pillow looks like. The women have a bonnet. Okay? It goes on the head like this. Literally like an Amish bonnet, if you will. And it ties at the neck. Okay? Now, you tie it and you make a slip knot. Some people make slip knots. Some people turn it a few times, and then they make a slip knot, okay? They put both, not like a bow that you do on your shoes, but a slip knot one. There are chevers that do bows on shoes, like they do on the shoes. Most chevers do not. In Eretz Yisrael, I'm a dayik in the Gesher HaChaim, that even the Gesher HaChaim didn't mean that, because in many places it's not. I think what he means is you turn around a few times and then make a slip knot rather than a... it just came up recently, Mamash, right before Shabbos, someone from Kherenisha called me horrified that Kherenisha they just joined is making slip knots like we do on our shoes. Mice and most others do not do that, they just make a slip knot. They pull, you know, they twist it, and then pull both pieces together through as a slip knot, and sometimes they separate it, but they don't make slip knots. Sometimes they make a few slip knots that look like a shin. That's different, but again, not a bow type of a thing, but just a slip knot. It's a little bit less of a kesher. Whatever it might be, these are the topic, I'm not going to get too involved in it, but that's what's generally done. But in any case, so this is what the bonnet looks like. And then there is a face cover. The face cover goes on the face. Okay, now there are many, it goes on the face afterwards, and it covers the going down.
So it's
all
behind the neck?
No, so that's again, yes. I will tell you what I think is done in most chevers.
Okay.
It's like, basically like what Arab women wear, but it goes all the way up to here, and it gets brought around the back of the head, and then it's either tied on the forehead, or it is tied at the bottom underneath. It's brought down, but it starts from the top. This is on the top. And then, I don't do tires by women, but I'm just telling you what I have learned. It comes down, it's tied under the chin. So it actually holds it in place, which is great because it holds the shamrock in place and everything else if it's done that way. But usually this is not tied until afterwards because when they... what happens is if you tie this and then you start putting on the tahrichim, it's very hard to keep it in place. Okay, so what they do is they leave it untied on the face, and then after it's all dressed, that's the last thing that they do. Many chevers, okay? I'm not going to tell you to change it. I'm not a bookie what's done in the Women's Tower or some rooms because I don't do Women's Tower. Just take the bar hammers that have done it that way, which bring it, they do it on the bottom, they bring it up. But I think the general minimum as I know it is that it's done at the forehead. You can ask around.
I think that's been said on the book.
Yeah, check it. Okay, in any case. But this is the face cover. For the men, you know, my thread on the table, that's my coffee. That is the face cover for the men. It's like an executioner's helmet without the eyes. It's basically covers the whole head. Okay? It goes over the entire head. And that is the face cover. And that is put on first, both for the men and the women. We start with the mitznefes. We then go down the body. I must say, this is one of the very few chevers that follow my minhag, our minhag, which is to put on the shirt second. That's what it says in your book. You put on the shirt, it's like this. It's cut down, it's not fully open. And it's placed over, let me show you a quick, I'm sure this is the way you do it, but I'll show those people who have not done it before. You basically lay it out with the head towards the feet, with the open side facing down. You put your hand inside. One person on either side, there'll be another person on the left side of the body. Put your hand through to the end, and then take the hand of the person who died, place their hand into the sleeve. You pull it up, and when it comes all the way up, here is where I have my own patent, and if you look at the website of that shear, you can fast forward it. You'll see how we do it. It's very nicely done so that people bring it over. The person here puts their hand in, lifts the head. It's brought under, and then it comes down the back. That is the way the tachrifim are put on for the shirt. And then you have the pants. I will show you what the pants look like. The pants are pants. The pants are a set of pants, a pair of pants, but it's with closed feet most of the time. Some chevers have open feet, like little booties that come with it, and it's open. But it does have pants. This is both for the men and the women. And the bottoms are closed, like baby pajamas, except without the elastic. Okay, so that's it. This is the pants. And that is put on, again, by two people on the other side pulling it up. I will tell you that it's nice to learn how to do it so that it minimizes how crunched up it gets. The best way to do it is to learn to just take your pants and you see the seam that runs along the side. Just using your hands, just crawl all the way down to the bottom, put the foot in, and then pull up. Unfortunately, it's hard for me to show it, but that is the best way. You try to minimize the amount to it. The pants go over the shirt. Okay. I will tell you that most chevers kedusha put the pants on first, and if they do, the shirt goes over the pants. Whatever gets put on first stays first, and people get buried like teenagers. And the shirt are out of the pants. Okay, that's the way it is, and there's a good reason for it. The Kohen Gadol put on his pants first. That's what brought down the Kohen Gadol. People are not dressed. The first thing they do generally is put on their pants. It makes no sense. But the pasuk that we say says Bat Kodesh Yilbosh. Then was Uchsoynes Bat Kodesh Yilbosh or Michnas Sevad Yirol Basar. So even though Yil Al-Basar means they already were Al-Basar, but since the pasuk says Ksoinus by Kodesh Yilbosh, there are those who put on Ksoinus first, and that became the meaning of many communities. But what you must remember is that the shirt goes over the pants. If the pants are on first, the shirt is on first, the pants go over the shirt. Then there are bands that are tied at the neck, there are bands that are tied at the pants, at the waist, and then there are these little bendlach, these little bands, two of them, that tie on the feet over the tachrichim. For the men, they tie at the ankles. For the women, they tie right below the knee. They tie right below the knee. Okay? That is the bedlock. Everyone agrees with that. Okay? The kittel, which is the last thing we wear, we put on, actually not, there's the gartel, but the kittel is the same as the shksodes, as the shirt, except that the kittel has a collar. So the way to tell the kittel different from the shirt is that it has a collar. One of the most common questions I get from Chevron Kadisha, who don't set up the urn this way, is they put the kittel on first, now what do we do? Okay, we generally leave it, we don't take it over, they tear it, the process would leave it. But you should know that the kittel is the one with the collar. You have to be careful when you put on the kittel, which I saw, that you have to hold on to and make sure the sleeve of the shirt doesn't get pulled up as you're pulling down the kittel. Okay, now. And then there's a gartel. There's a long band similar to this. It's a lot longer. Now this gartel can be put on different ways. You have to be careful that it doesn't twist. You want to put it under the back, where the back is a little upper, is raised. And you can slide it through so that it's straight. And then you can tie it there. There are others that find, sometimes it's hard to, there are those who put it by the neck and slide it down, keeping it straight, whichever way. You turn this, there is a minhag that when you turn, make these turns. Let me show you what it looks like. Whenever you're tying these bands, maybe give me one of the small bands that are over there, it'll be easier to demonstrate it. We're tying this band, let's say at the foot, below the knee. Got it. Below the knee. The minhag is, so we tie it clockwise. So the right goes over the left. Some people turn, if you're not making turns, I don't know what you do. Do you turn it at all? You don't turn. Do you make any turns? You, what?
Yes, we turn.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, so making turns, you can have people on different sides, one on either side making the turns, and then when you finish turning, I'll show you, by the way, how to make a slip knot. You make the slip knot, you take both ends, you bring it through, and this is the slip knot, not like a bow, but a slip knot. Okay, both come through and it's tight. Okay?
This is for the gartel.
This is for the, I'm doing the foot right now.
Oh.
Okay, the foot. What I will say is the following. For the neck, for the two bands at the neck, and also for the bonnet for the women, there are those who hold that in front of the face, you don't twist. You don't have people on either side doing it, because it's not becoming to be in front of someone's face turning your hands in front of the face. There are those who hold that by those places, one person can do it. I'm not telling you to change. If you have two people, it's fine. But the point is that it is twisted that way, and then the slip knots are made. By the feet, again, most places have two people doing it. It doesn't have to be. Whatever your minhag is fine. There is one minhag that the slip knots are always facing the heart, so that at the top, they should be facing down. At the bottom of the body, they should be facing up. At the middle of the body, they should be facing up. The slip knots at the gartel, there everyone holds that you have two people turning it. The number of turns, I saw you have 9, I think, 9 1/3. Well, where is the 9? By the pants?
Yes.
Yeah, the 9 by the pants. If I tell you we have 7 by the collar, by the shirt, we have 9 by the kittel, we have 10 by the pants, we have 13 by the gartel, and we have 5 by the, each of the feet. Where it came from? The Vada Flatbush. Sidney Applebaum taught us. I don't know, someone here was related to Rabbi Applebaum. Whatever. Yeah. Okay, his chevra. Whatever it might be, the fact is, that's what we learned. It came from some source, we were told not to change it. The Chicago booklet has 4, everywhere 4. Okay, except the gartel, there everyone says 13, the Yud Gimel Midas. Now there is a minhag by the gartel specifically, that you make a shin, okay? And there are some chevers that make a shin and a dalet. What they do is they have on the left side, you have two slip knots facing the head. On the right side, they have one slip knot facing the head and then one slip knot facing down. So when you're looking at the niftar, you have three slip knots or a shin. Then you have the gartel itself, and one going down is a dalet, and the person is a yid, a yud, and together it spells the name of Hashem, Shaka. That is a minhag, it's an old minhag, done in many, many chevers, and that's fine. Whatever your minhagim are, in this regard, but by the gartel, it's almost universal that you have two people turning it, that you make three shins, and that you have yud gimel, you have 13 turns, when you turn them, talit beis gimel dalet, whatever it is. Okay, that is important. So that is how you dress the person. Again, it's something to be careful with. Try to do it as well as you can. You should have tachrichim that fit. There are times you need extra large tachrichim and so on. Once the body is completely dressed, then it is placed in the aron. It could be either carried. The aron can be put in front, and it can be carried down, it can be put at the side and moved over, whichever way, every room is different, every situation, the table is different, should be able to raise the table, make sure your funeral home has a table that can be raised higher than the aron, so that you could put it into the aron comfortably. That's very important. And the way which we showed you, once the person is in the aron, then you put on, and they are lying flat, the head is properly adjusted on the pillow, and you are ready to close it. At that point, there's a minhag to put Ofer Eretz Yisrael on the face. And the minhag is to put, I'm sorry, not on the face, we put it on the eyes, we put it by the heart, and we put it at the private areas. That's for both men and women. It's done in the aron before we wrap the sheet. Okay, now we say the words V'chiper Admasai Amoy, because being placed in the ground is a source of kapara, is an atonement. People don't realize Kvura is a tremendous Chesed Hashem, that through the process of returning to the earth, we receive kapara. After we die, person, even they didn't do tshuva, there's a natural kapara that takes place through Kvura, but not if a person doesn't have Kvura. So that's something that we should know. V'chiper Admasai Amoy. Now, you're not in a community-wide chevra, you're in your own shul's chevra. So how much earth to put on the face? Still an Indian brought down in some places not to put too much dirt on the eyes. Not to put too much on the face, because not be covered to put dirt on the face. In some communities, and you look at the Yeshua Chaim, they actually put the dirt into the eye. And then they close the eye. And I remember seeing it, and I thought it was a mistake. But when I met the Bukharian community, that's how they do it. And I found out that in Eretz Yisrael, they also do it that way. That's the way it's brought down. But certainly, there's no chazanish shir on how much earth to put on the eyes. So you can put a little bit to be yitz the minhag, and that's fine. Okay, but we say v'chiper Admasai Amoy, we then put by the heart the same. Now, we put Israel earth into the pillow. Okay, in fact, I will tell you that in Uraim chapels in Williamsburg, I don't know if they still do, but when I was there many, many years ago, they didn't have straw. Their pillow was made from earth. They had earth, they had sand, and they filled the pillow with sand. That's what it was made of. I gave a shiur once in Mexico City where the Tahara room is on the cemetery, and they filled the pillow with the earth from the person's own grave. And they do it right there, they fill it with earth. So that's the way it is. But to put Ofer Eretz Yisrael into the pillow. I saw that you put Ofer Eretz Yisrael also into the Aron, so I would just suggest that you put it underneath the Solev, not on top of the Solev, so it should not dirty the main tachrichim. Okay? That's what's brought down. It's fine, it's brought down many places to do it, but that's the way it's preferably done. I will just add one or two more things, and then we'll end. Number one, a kittel. There was a minhag that people were buried in their own kitlach. And for many years, we always did that. People would bring their kittle. Usually, sometimes it had buttons, sometimes it had snaps. We would remove the snaps, we would remove the buttons, try not to cut it, just to remove the stitching, whatever. When Ramosha was Nifter, somehow I got word of this, and I asked later, I asked Reb David, I asked others. His feeling was, it's not just his feeling, it makes a lot of sense. If someone had a kittel that was made of linen, then of course you should use their kittel. In Europe, no one wore linen. It's brought, Daki Moshe brings, other brings, that to have a linen kittel is a tremendous thing, but it's very expensive. It used to be in Europe, linen was very expensive. So people couldn't afford linen, they didn't have linen. So they brought their own kittel, and that's what they used, because the tafrichim were not made of linen, and the kittel was not made of linen, but it's better to be used, burying your own kittel, like it's better than burying your own talus. Because you're standing before the Rebbe Shem in that same kittel that you sat by the Seder and you davened Yom Kippur with all the tears. It's an inyan. But the question becomes, if you're wearing linen tachrichim and now you're going to put on a regular kittel that's made of cotton or something else, is the mila of your own kittel better than the mila of linen? So there is a tremendous mila to linen. This is why I recommend it. The Pisrei Tshuva brings that if you have linen, it has to be entirely made of linen. Even what you sew it with, the threads that you sew it with, every thread has to be linen. So to have linen, tachrichim, and a kittel that's not linen, Reb Moshe held it's better to use the linen kittel that is not his own than to use his own, not the linen kittel, if you have a linen tachrichim. That was Reb Moshe held. So I tell the families, I started telling families, if you want to, this is what he held. Do what you want. So we put the kittel in at the foot, we leave it with the person, but we use a linen kittel. It's something I thought I should share. If you take a look at the Yalkut Me'am Loes, right at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, he brings a fascinating little shtickle that brings from Sifrei Kabbalah, and I think the Pisrei Tshuva refers to that as well, which is that when Rochav HaZoyna hid the people, Vatit B'nei B'Pishtei Ha'etz, she hid the Meraglim in the Pishtei Ha'etz, she hid them among the flax, because flax is a shmira, it protects against all kinds of things, and it protects the person, but it has to be only flax. I'm choshish that maybe one of the reasons why they did not use talesim in Eretz Yisrael for the final Kvura, because they used linen, and they didn't even want the talus not to be linen, because if you look at the Yalkut Me'am Loes, he says that you should not use, if you're using a talus, it should be a linen talus. Okay, that's how far it goes. I don't know if that's the reason, all my own conjecture. But the fact is, it's an Indian, as far as the kittel goes, we still use talesim, but as far as the kittel goes, we should, if a person has a kittel that is made of linen, matov manoy, but otherwise not. Now, one more thing, and with that I'll end. I always find that people, besides the fact that the tachrichim are meant to resemble and to model, are modeled after the Big Day Kohen Gadol, there is, obviously they're not exact, but the point is to help us understand getting back to Minhagei Yisrael. I'm going to ask a question that I'm asked all the time by different people. There are a number of questions about these tachrichim. Number one, the feet are closed. Number two, women who wouldn't be caught dead in pants are caught dead in pants. How do pants get to women? Okay, in our world, women don't wear pants. How come the older the Chashivs, the Rebbetzins, getting buried in pants? How does that work? And what is the kittel? Do women wear a kittel? It's all very complex. And I think the answer, as I found it, I best was able to put it together, is when they were misakin, first of all, let's talk about the closed feet. I was giving a shir in Cherry Hill, and they told me that their Chera Kedisha was told to have a minhag from Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab said that at one time during the Tahara, you should expose the feet of the person.
We do it anyway. We're not the people are more exposed than the feet. But you should make sure the feet are exposed, because it's a bizayin to have exposed feet. And therefore, it's as close for the person that can't do anything. I should have a bizayin in this world and a bizayin in the next world. We can give them a schus. Never heard it before, never heard it since. But I was told that's what he said. But it helps us understand why the feet are closed, because in those days they used to carry people to the kever and didn't have an aron always. They, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have a right, so they had closed feet. Okay. We wanted to create a set of clothes that was universal. And what are we going to do? We wanted to make it like the Bidei Kohen Gadol, but women don't dress like men. So what did we do? So we created what is a mitznefes, more like a mitznefes. I can't answer exactly why it's so different. The mice, women wore a bonnet, did not, whatever. The face had to be covered because the face shouldn't be uncovered, whatever. But the tachrichim were meant to be different for the men and the women. Which is why one of the biggest questions is, what are these little bendlach, these little bands that tie by the feet? What are they? Kohen Gadol didn't wear them. What are we putting these little bands on for? The answer is that the bands were meant to define the clothing. For a man, it separates between the pants and the shoe at the ankle. For the women, it separates what was worn until 100 years ago. Those of us who watched Gone with the Wind and remember Scarlett O'Hara, right below, before she was getting dressed, she had pantaloons, which tied right below the knees. That's what women wore. Everyone, women, their undergarments wore pantaloons. That's what they wore. So this is meant to define that this is not pants. It's a high boot. And it's undergarments that are tied right below the knee. It's pantaloons. And the kittel is a dress. And the shirt is a blouse. But it's the Big Day Kohen Gadol defined differently for men and women. Okay, that's the way I understand these tachrichim. So to understand that someone's going to say, hey, the women do it like this, men like this, we should do it the same for this. Recognize that and believe me, we know a tipa shebiyam where the menhagim come from. There's so much Kabbalah stuff that we don't know. But the fact is that we should, again, I'm just emphasizing the importance of menhagi Yisrael to recognize they are beautiful. Shablach. Okay. So now we'll end with Shablach. How are we going to get there? But Shablach is pottery that is placed on the eyes and the mouth. You know, it used to be a waiter was carrying dishes and he slipped a whole pot of dishes, who went from crashing. The Chevra Kadisha would applaud. We got enough shablach for years to come, because it used to be that dishes were made of earthenware. Now they're not too much of that either. But the fact was, it was made of earthenware, and therefore we were able to use it. And I remember in the early days, we had a whole stack of broken pottery, and we would put a blue flower in the right eye and a red stripe in the left eye. It was terrible. So I came up with an idea to buy flower pots. We go to Home Depot now. We buy flower pots that are made of cheres. It costs 69 cents, probably up by now. But a 6-inch flower pot will do it. You drop it and you have shablach. You can make it. They're contoured, which is perfect for the eyes and the mouth. And you place it on the eyes and the mouth. It is meant to be large enough to cover the eye and large enough to cover the mouth. You don't have to make them perfect, because it's meant to be not a kli, but a shever kli. It's meant to be broken. Why do we put this only on the eyes and the mouth and nowhere else? Why not on the heart? Okay, why not other places? I have my own shot. But first of all, the reason we put all this earth is because being buried in the earth is a kapara, like we said. And since we don't bury directly in the ground, we put earth with the person. Because there's a medrash that says if there's earth at the top of the body and at the middle of the body, at the lower end of the body, it's kilu, they're buried in the ground. It's such a medrash. So because of that, we put earth at the eyes, at the chest, and at the primary area, so we have it over the whole body, and it helps, it simulates being buried in the ground. Of course, since the biggest covenant is to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, so we use off Eretz Yisrael. Another way of putting earth with the body is shablach. Why? Shablach represent how we view a person. A person was a kli. A person was a tzelem elokim who functioned, did mitzvahs, helped people, did all kinds of wonderful things. Okay? So that person deserves kavod, even though now they can no longer function like a broken piece of pottery. The same way. So therefore we give kavod. It symbolizes how we view a person. A person is a shever kli. The question that I had is, and by the way, so we need to understand why at these places, because since the return of the body to the earth is a kapara, so where should you place it except for the places of sin? The places where we have a tendency to sin from, that's where we place the earth. That's why it's in the eyes, the mouth, and the prime ears. That's why it's in these places. Now, the question is, what do we need the pottery for? We have our Eretz Yisrael. There are chevers, by the way, put earth in the mouth. I don't know where it came from. I never saw such a thing, but there are chevers, whatever. I believe, this is my own shot, that because there were many instances where people's eyes were open, you couldn't close them. People's mouths were open, and we couldn't close them. They created a way of putting on pottery over the eyes and the mouth so that it'll remain closed. And that's why we put, again, they're both sources of Avera, and the mouth, in fact, was never taken care of, so to speak. So therefore, we placed cheres on the eyes. That's my own shot. I've never seen it anywhere. Take it for whatever it's worth. But the minhag Yisrael is to put cheres over the eyes and the mouth. We do it by everyone, because that's the way it is. Just like in Eretz Yisrael, we always bury people who are in an accident and an Arid, people who died in the war, even if they died, whatever, it's all military people, it's not to differentiate. We put cheres on for every person, even if the eyes are closed. That's the way I understand it. And I know that I saw in your procedures that you also use sticks. It's a minig in a Hasidic minig in some communities. It's in Makel, what? Yes, you get up with your hands. It's, everything is, again, based on our belief in Mashiach, our belief in everything. So we should talk about Yizoche by chesed that we're doing, that it comes from our desire to do good. And the chesed that we're doing, which is defined by Emes, which underscores and symbolizes everything that we believe in, we should taka bizocha to see the gula b'mehera yimeinu. Amen.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Zohn. Kaddish Baruch Hu should give you and your Rebbetzin who's here in the back tremendous nachas and health and strength to continue to help Klal Yisrael for many, many more years to come.
Amen.
If you would like to be again more involved in the Chevra, with the men, you can reach out to Ari. Ari is right here in the front. Or you can see the Shevi right here at the front table. As well, you should welcome everyone for coming. For you to be able to change the sponsoring. You can sing for a minute from Ari. In the shul right here.
My father's friend, always said, if you give a good bracha, you get a chen lemar. So he said, you always give a good bracha. He said, you give a chen lemar, you always get a good bracha. Save a chen lemar, people will give you good brachas, they want to get it back. That was the thing. All right. Anyway, it's the car.
When you go to Eretz Yisrael, you still go in an Aron, and that Aron goes in that other thing.
Yeah, no. You put them directly into that metal.
Into that metal thing. Okay. Yeah,
take next question. Yes.
Just a quick question. You know the Chevra Kedusha in Israel. Sometimes they do hakafos.
Yeah.
Sometimes
it's not
they do this thing with the.
It's not Aron Hovi.
What is it?
It's brought down. It's the Minhagi Yisrael. The Minhagi. That's the Minhagi Eretz Yisrael.
Last thing, it's a crematorium. Like you're talking about cremation, and I'm thinking as a child of survivors.
Everyone
about crematorium. What?
Don't worry about them. They're right under the Kisiakum. Don't worry about them at all. Don't worry about them at all. I'll tell you a story. You know, there was a Meshuggah rabbi in Florida. A reform rabbi wrote an article that if you cremate, there's no better way to identify with the Holocaust survivors than to cremate yourself. Meshuggah. Why? rabbis weren't doing funerals on cremation. They wanted to increase cremation so he'd have more business. He was a reform rabbi. Anyway, many people got caught up in that. Many Holocaust survivors were... I'll never forget, I gave a lecture. It was in New Orleans. A woman came over to me afterwards, and I spoke about these issues. And someone asked me, what about the Holocaust? I said, if you choose to cremate, you will not get up to your summation. That's what you want.
Well, what I do is the other way. If I know someone's Jewish and they want to cremate, and I just say things like, because there are people at my work or something, I'll say, well, you know, I'm a child survivor, so we're all cremated. That's a reminder of that. Do you want to be like,
yeah,
look?
Yeah.
So I can tell you, it doesn't work. Bottom line is, I said that it says Kalakofa Betriya Samesim. You don't believe Betriya Samesim, you don't have a Chelik Bozo. Chabad Rabbi gets up and says, you're telling me all these people who died in the Holocaust are not going to have all of my blood? I said, didn't say that. I said, they will have. So I told him a Gemara. There's a Gemara that says exactly this. There were 200 slaves being taken to, 200 beautiful Jewish children, boys and girls, that were being taken to Rome to be used as sex slaves. And they realized what's going to be with their lives. They decided they're going to jump into the Mediterranean. They're going to jump into the ocean. Except one of them said, what's going to be with our Olam Haba? The other one quoted a pasuk, says, the oldest of them quoted a pasuk in Tehillim. Hashem said, Omer Hashem, I'm going to return you Miboshon, which the Gemara says means it's an acronym, means Ben Shine Arayas. Even if you're devoured by a lion, there's nothing left from you. Arshiv, I will return you in Mitzulos Yom from the depths of the sea. So Marshall explains, Hashem will bring you back. If you die, I'll kiddush Hashem. Nothing to worry about. You're going to come back. So I told, so I said this over at this thing. I said, if you die, I'll kiddush Hashem. You don't have to worry. A woman comes over to me after the lecture. And she says, Rabbi, I think we need to talk. So she calls me over to the side. She says, I have a will to be cremated. Because I want to be with my mother and my sister. She had a twin sister. I had enough for now, and they bought me all kinds of stuff, and it was not enough. So they were home. So she said I have a will to be created. So she says, but now I'm not so sure. I don't know if it's the right thing to do. So I said to her, I can tell you it's not the right thing to do. I said, I want to be with my mother and my twin sister. I said, let me ask you a question. I said, are you born Orthodox or are you born into a very problem? I said, what would your mother have given on the way to the gas chambers? They told her you're going to have to die, but we'll bury you in a Jewish cemetery. If you can give us something. She says she had nothing to give, but she would have given her right arm. She would have given anything. She hadn't just thought about it. I said, what do you think your mother and sister are going to say to you when you meet them? Wherever it is you think you're going to meet them. If you chose to be cremated, you have every opportunity to be buried in the church. Are you crazy? What are you thinking? You read something in the newspaper? You're thinking logically? I said, change it. I gave her my card. I said, lose your resolve, call me. Never heard. I hope she didn't. Mice, but that's it's a crate. There's so much out there that people read and it affects them. They don't think. But anyways, I told her, so she, but this is what it is out there. They have, it doesn't work. That doesn't work. We have a whole website now dedicated to this issue. You saw our program.
Yeah, we had the whole website.
It's great.
Yeah.
Quick question for Michael. The pieces of Padre that you put, how do they stay in place?
Is it
on top of the?
On top of the eyes.
No, once the body's covered.
No.
Before.
Right on the face.
No, but I'm like moving it.
It stays. If you do it right, it's rounded.
The mouth. It's like a special way of breaking it?
Yeah, it's rounded. It's a round pot.
Thank you very much. It was very good. I'm going to tell my sister-in-law that you mentioned your father.
Yes.
Sydney Applebaum. Yeah.
You mentioned that the egg, when do you put that on? That's
right before you start dressing.
One time we closed up the box, and then we realized we forgot to do one of the, I think it was the egg wash. We forgot to do the vinegar and egg wash. And we weren't sure if there's an Indian, once you close up, that you shouldn't reopen it or not.
Just to open it, to put it in, I would say fine. I would open it.
Okay. We did.
Yeah. Sky, excellent share. If somebody, and we're a four Schleimer.
Thank you.
If somebody has a hip replacement, the hip that's taken out.
There's no hip to bury. There's some people that do it. There's no hip.
No hip.
A leg, a finger.
A limb, right.
Anything that has bone, sinews, and flesh. Vosser Gidden Vatsamos. That's the halacha.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
And for
thank you for making progress.
We'll be able to do this many times.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you.
That goes into a second place.
This goes a second
place. Yes, I said they'd sit through three more if I could
well,
do it.
Well, your mom is tzaddik. That's all I have to say. It's tzaddik gamor.
I'm not a halabai.
And if you were a woman, halabai, I would reserve you for mine.
I wish it was so, but unfortunately, you know, I know my own little pimples. I know the far from the tzaddik. Baruch Hashem, this mitzvah we try to do as best as we can, resolve it to teach it. I want to minimize it. It's phenomenal.
Well, the one thing that bothers that I was thinking a lot about to record is never coming. My parents are Holocaust survivors, but all the people in the Amish.
Yes. But as I say, you know, those people. They don't stop to collect them or whatever is in there. They go straight. So I wouldn't worry about those people. In a certain sense, you know, in this world, it's a terrible thing. I'm not minimizing the horror of the politics. But the fact is, because they had so much to look for, they were a lot more powerful, so it looked like if there was, although the place wasn't in a great place then either, but the fact is that they for them, it was a tremendous push to die, occupation, there's no more discussion, they keep it, it's whole life.
is asking, halavaya, I will have the opportunity to give my life. People who weren't from, people who were, so most of the people who died, most of the people who died were not from, they were offered to, you know, lift in Gan Eden.
Where do you live?
Yeah, no, we live in
Queens. What part? Hugh
Gardens.
Oh, I grew up in Hillcrest.
Okay,
so I'm sure you're
a hop, skip, and a jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the Farrakhanisha for all of Queens. Adina used to work.
Adina still calls me all the time.
She does, because first of all, her son, Natan used to work for me as a showman.
My grandfather also was a very good model in Canada. He was a big rock. Mayor Schwartzman. So if you know that he actually lost the name, at least 5 or 10 years before he was Easter, and he buried them like in his backyard, and then he was buried in his grill. They took the whole thing with him. They don't do that now?
No.
Really?
Thank you. Always. Every chazar is valuable.
Yep. I got it. Thank you.
You were talking in the beginning. You talked about chesed. It's a chesed that can't be repaid. The chesed we do is also for families.
Yes, 1,000%.
And a great example would be my brother-in-law. You were instrumental. If I don't know if you remember, about 12 years ago, my brother-in-law's father had a seizure or a stroke or something while he was driving, and he drove off the road. And he was missing for about 2 weeks. His name was Stephen Mayer.
Oh.
And
his wife, what's it called?
Susan.
Susan worked for us. I was... Oh. There I was involved. That story I will never forget. That story was a little bit of an insane couple of weeks. And then what we did to stop an autopsy there, I'll never forget. I remember going to the medical examiner's office. A little bit. Thanks. The same way you have to just take it slowly so you don't... Yeah. Okay, we're ready for
By
that.
By the way, will you say the tefillah?
No, it's not that suitcase. It's this one, and it has to be put in very... be very careful. It has to be exactly where it comes out. So the spot. That's the one.
I'll tell you that it's no small thing to know that.
This one is the one that's hard to put in. But having that up.